I mean, what's more football focused doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PML.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. So, we're going team by team. I would be very careful about slinging stuff. Am I going to get sued?
Are we legal on this?
I like football. I like football season. All the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo, Sam Monson, and two very special guests. It's Mike Renner and Austin Gale, a reunion of sorts, right here from the Western Southern Studio.
Tailgate podcast, back in the house.
We're back. We're announcing that we're back. That's what the title says.
No announcement.
All right, you've already lied to everyone.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. That's a good start.
Good start.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking news per Twitter last night. Mike Renner leaving PFF, heading to free agency. So that's
last day. I think it was
11 years.
Almost 11 years. So I think I started like my very first, like Cal had sent me an email saying I got the gig or whatever. It was probably like June of 2012, right after college. So almost 11 years.
Wow. We've been your only job since college.
Yeah. Only job.
Do you know what the real world's like, Mike? Do you know
it's
what
fucked.
You're...
I'm telling you right now.
He's about to find out.
No, PFF was my only job out of college.
Yeah.
The Ringers treat me well, though. And LA is nice. I'm liking California.
Yeah.
So I mean,
it can't be worse than like...
Are you recruiting to the Ringer?
I can't disclose anything really on open mic.
The real world can't be worse than 2012 to 2014 PFF, though, if we're being real.
Hell month?
Those were... Yeah. I mean, that was like...
I've heard the war stories.
I think it was 2014 was when we were really swamped.
Yeah.
And I was also doing like special teams PP, which I think is the worst job we have at PFF.
It's just charting where everybody lined up.
But on special teams.
On special teams.
Yeah. So that one, I made the mistake of being the one who could do it the fastest. So, of course, Neil gave me the most games.
Yeah.
And so there would be days from like Sunday, I remember Sunday when the game started, to Tuesday morning where I didn't sleep that whole stretch because I just got a deadline every single every 6 hours.
That stretch was like you didn't sleep Sunday nights generally. Mm-hmm. There was a run there where so Chris comes in, buys PFF 2014, and Chris comes in, investment resources want to take the thing somewhere different. One of the first questions he asks is, what does it take to get college football done as well as the NFL? And Neil, being Neil, is like, nothing. We can do that. Our guys can do that. No problem. So the first year, we didn't hire anybody else. We just did college football in addition to the NFL. And whatever deadline that we needed to get the games wrapped by the Super Bowl, right?
Yes.
Before, so we could show it to the people by the combine, which meant that we were falling further and further behind.
By January 1st.
Yeah.
We were halfway through the college season.
So we were falling further and further behind during the NFL season because the NFL took precedent. We already had orders, deadlines, actual customers we needed to meet. So the college was just falling behind, which meant once we got to the playoffs, it was like, right now, you need to redouble your effort and catch back up in college. So January 2015, right,
yes,
was hell month, where everybody that could do analysis was just grinding 5-7 days a week doing college football games to catch up. It was awful.
I appreciate the initiative from Neil right there. Dude, Chris buys the company. He's like, you need college? I'll fucking do it. And then everyone else does it. But it's a great – I like the push.
Yeah.
I like the push.
We were challenged just getting NFL done on a week with our 8 to 10 analysts. And it was like, yeah, of course we could just do college.
Yeah. Well,
January 2015, I did not leave my house. I remember going to like a christening or something. And I was like, oh, no, I gotta like make up a game and a half here because I left my house. It was so crazy. I mean, this was 7 days a week. You had to crank out every game took 7 or 8 hours. You had to crank out a game and a half a day, basically, to keep pace for 31 days.
Right,
and that was the thing. One day I didn't get a game in because I was doing Baylor TCU that year, and that was back when Baylor had Art Briles, and so they would run 100 plays a game, and that was like that was the most plays in a game all year. It was like 245 plays in a game. Most games are like 150. And I didn't get it done that day. And I get a message from Cal being like, what the hell is wrong with you? Why haven't you gotten a game done? And I was like, well,
the Dropbox file and seeing how many plays were in your half or your game was massive. Because if it was like 65, 70, it was like, oh,
depending on what you're doing, the type of game was important as well. So like 100 plus plays of a spread offense wasn't that bad because of the way the pass versus the run game worked. But if you had a triple option game that was, even if it was like, you know, 65, it's like, this is hell. This is an absolute walking nightmare to grade this one. Give me that one dramatically over that. The other thing is, when we got to the end of that month, like one of the last games, because like tape didn't come in or it came in patches or whatever, I think maybe the very last game we were working on up until a couple of hours before the Super Bowl was Middle Tennessee State against Eastern Michigan. And the tape had come in like three or four times in different ways. And everyone was sort of splitting this game, working on it in little bits and pieces. It was terrible. That was one of the worst months anybody's
so
ever
PFF
had.
Just sucks? Or, I mean, was this the banging or what are we doing?
When PFF was in startup mode, people had to work hard and kind of lay the groundwork, lay the foundation for where we are.
Share experiences. That's what it is.
Yeah,
camaraderie.
Yes. Now, so you guys, it was exciting. So you're in town, Austin.
Yeah.
Why are you in town?
Quinn's wedding. Mike Quinn, who's a producer here at PFF, also was the producer of
Tailgate
and 2-for-1 Draft. He's been there from the jump. So his wedding, Sobchak's going, who's producing this show as well. So he invited me out. I had good reason to get into Cincy. And then coincidentally, it's Mike's last day. So then I got invited onto this show and the rest is history.
So we hyped it up as the greatest show in the history of shows. Not even podcasts. It was just the biggest thing going. Because you guys created a bit of a following, right, the last couple of years.
Tried to. I mean, Tailgate was unique in the draft space in that I feel like a lot of draft content is overly serious in nature, that it's like dramatic and they tried to like build the drama, whereas we were never serious about it. Like we enjoyed the fun of the draft process more so than the overtly.
Speaking of the fun aspect of it, I have a theory that I've been working on that I'm going to put to you right now. Mm-hmm. Is your Tanner McKee love an attempt to artificially inflate his mojo stock because you have money tied up?
No.
That's our theory.
It's not actually.
It's not a bad theory.
I am a
mock draft. Are you sure? Because
now, who have you done that with?
So I did go and Google Mike Renner and Tanner McKee and mojo, and I did find a tweet back in the day where you're like, this guy's going to go way higher. His mojo stock is currently whatever it is. Did you like sink $5,000 into it back in the day, and like I got to get this back.
I don't hate this.
I'm a mock draft influencer. I've said that before. Steve was in that, what was that, that Twitter group, or you were in it too, the Twitter group that Lance and I put together that had a lot of draft people. Yeah, and I was like, hey, let's just get together with one player. We move the line,
move
the line on them about where they're supposed to be going all spring.
Yeah.
Once the prop comes out, we all bet the other side, and then we all move him to where he's supposed to be, guys.
I think some people are doing that in the NFL.
It's one guy every year. Why can't we just
CJ Stroud vaults up to like -290 to be the Panthers' number one overall pick, and then like everyone just bets Bryce Young heavy before Scott Federer meets him or whatever it was. Like that's a big
mock draft syndicate. But no, unfortunately, no takers. There was maybe one person like that message. So still
Wait,
me here.
What?
Still me here trying to pump that up.
We could still get together and do that wherever you end up, Mike. We can still get together and
diversify.
Yes, Kenny Glenn is in the chat here, designer over at PFF, and he's begging for some Austin Gale stories. Do you have any good recent stories? Are you straight edge out there in LA now?
Locked in right now. Not gonna. No, I'm trying to think of some
Bill's
stories.
Bill's got you working overtime or what?
I'm always working OT. I'm trying to think of some stories I've got. Nothing really from LA. Living in a studio apartment now in LA.
Is there a story behind the four photos that you put out there yesterday?
Oh,
or at least one of them.
Yeah, yeah. The photos I put out yesterday of Mike was from our trip to Vegas. Mike wasn't even inebriated. I believe it was a hangover
that
had got him.
That was a little.
What happens in Vegas ends up on Twitter.
And then what happens in Vegas ends up on Twitter. Mm. I did want to bring one story because we were talking before we started recording about some of the worst things I did while I was here. And obviously there's a long list, but one of the worst things I definitely did was when I got to the role of where I was responsible for booking all the like hotels and planes and shit for the events.
That was the worst thing.
The East-West Shrine Bowl, when we send out a bunch of people. Let this be known. I got the fucking narrative to be like, cut every dollar. If you can, everyone sits in a middle seat, it works. Red eyes, all that stuff. So this isn't all my doing, but it was to save as much as possible. Note that being said, we go to Vegas. I'm looking for the cheap hotel in Vegas. Right? Yeah. I'm looking for legitimately, like, I don't care if it's not even in Nevada. Like, I'm looking for something that's very cheap. I end up finding the Mardi Gras Inn as the cheapest thing on hotels.com or whatever it was. And okay, he gets the cheapest hotel. Everyone gets their own room, right? No, I'm booking fucking four people to a room.
Yeah.
At the Mardi Gras Inn Hotel. We get in and it smells like one cigarette, like one big cigarette on like the like it's not on the strip. I don't know where it is. I don't even know if it was in Vegas. We get in there, it looks scary. Everyone's scared. Everyone's sleeping in two queen beds back to back. One of the producers or one of the video editors we had here before was like, I'm not sleeping here. Like legitimately like refusing to sleep here. It was like, he's like, I'm going to another hotel. And then the worst part of it all, and there's some stories of getting into that hotel. I did some pass protection sets with Anthony Trash, put him in the dirt. But some other things that happened is later in the week, we were going back to back from like Mardi Gras Inn to fucking, we went to Mobile and stayed at the worst hotel in Mobile, somehow found that too. If you go back and look at the Excalibur, which is where the East-West Shrine Bowl was held, it was like $5 more a night. It was like so much.
Yeah.
I could have looked to an extra second.
That is the thing. Yeah. Like, that's, I think, the theme with your mistaken bookings, right? Is you would simply look at the lowest number available.
Book and just
that,
take it.
And then not factor in any other like costs, relevant
data
details.
Guy. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So you would book stuff that was miles away. So it's $5 a night cheaper, but you need to Uber half an hour to the venue, which is making it like the fifth most expensive hotel you could bought.
You should have seen the fucking hotel we stayed in Tennessee when I was booking us for the tailgate trip.
That
me,
one was,
Mike,
that was the
and
worst
Dave
one.
Sofaro go to this random hotel in Knoxville, Tennessee, where like it is sketch.
It had it had cobwebs in the hotel.
It was cobwebs like, in the hotel. The shower was a scene. We couldn't shower because it looked like a mud pit. And we, the door barely locked, whatever it was, we literally grabbed our backpacks and stuffed them behind the TV, trying to like just save. Right. We were scared to leave the place. It was, I'll never do it again. I'd not want to book it ever again, but those were some of my worst moments.
Two of my favorite Austin Gale stories. One was at this first time ever at the Senior Bowl. The first night.
Oh no, this
you
is a
stayed out till like 5 a.m. and then woke up at 11:30 or something the next day with I think 20 missed calls from Neil Hornsby because you were supposed to have done like
a day one recap and takeaways thing.
That one was great.
That was one of the worst hangovers I've ever had.
And the other one was when we went to LSU. I find you and Dave Sofaro at a Five Guys after we had left a bar that we were at. You had eaten Five Guys. We leave the Five Guys. We're like, let's go back to the hotel. It was getting late. We get back to the hotel, and there's a Waffle House next to the hotel. You guys say, let's go to the Waffle House, too. And you went to the Waffle House, had a full plate of hash browns, and ordered two milks.
Two glasses of milk. When I tell you my breath the next morning legitimately was yogurt. It was like the worst breath I've ever had the next day. I could barely open my mouth. It was like string. It was rough.
Everybody has those stories of you look at your phone, there's 20 missed calls from Neil.
Yeah.
But Renner is one of the few people that's actually been fired by Neil.
By the way, be careful. Hold on really quick, Sam. Sorry to interrupt. Special guests in the chat, not only Dr. Eric Eager, but also Neil.
Uh-huh. Neil's
Neil
in the chat.
In the chat. Neil is in the chat. So
give us the fire story.
Before we get into the – yeah, because I had the over on Renner getting fired 1.5 times. I had him getting fired twice.
One more time.
He's only been fired once, now he is left on his own volition.
And beautifully, it didn't count. Yeah. He's the only person that got fired, and it just didn't happen. Yeah. It didn't take.
HR just said nope.
So, wait, before you go, someone in the chat, his name's Parker, bless his heart. He's like, what is going on? Because we're just ripping random stories. Yeah. But go ahead.
If you are not a
tailgater, this is a show today.
We will later in this show football. Get to MJD's mock draft.
Someday.
But for the moment, it's a bit of reminiscing.
So it was Memorial Day 2016, or Memorial Day weekend 2016, which is nothing's going on in the NFL, right? And so I was kind of splitting at that point between still doing grading and being content full-time and like just doing that, focusing on that. And so I'm writing like 4 or 5 articles a week. I'm doing, Neil had asked me also to start doing some stuff in terms of like, I think it was like game planning or like creating like charts. This is before Ultimate even existed, like creating like ways to use our data with Visual Basic. And so I'm doing that and the 4 or 5 articles a week. And Khaled has said to everyone that was a grader also to do 5 games a week of just like practice or whatever. We were doing old seasons of grading. 2006 maybe.
7 okay. Or 6.
Yeah, one of those.
6 grading. We're doing supposed to be doing
06 that year, I believe.
Everyone else, but like those are people who are just grading. I thought we're doing the 5 games a week. And so it comes to this was on a Thursday, Neil says to me, it kind of comes to a head, and Neil's like, you haven't been doing your games. Khaled said you haven't been doing your games. Why is that? I'm like, well, you have this, gave me this. Editorial's giving me this. I didn't realize I was doing what everyone else is doing. He's like, okay, understandable. Just get your games done this week, and you're good. And it was a Thursday, and I'm like, tomorrow, can I work from home? Because it's easier to do games at home. unbeknownst to him, I was going to Las Vegas at like a 1 p.m. flight, and it was going to help me to be at home the next day because he was forcing everyone to be in the office at that point. Like, he was like, everyone has to come to the office every day.
The good old days.
And he's like, sure, if that like helps, sure. I get a game done on Thursday. I get a game done on Friday. I think I'm in the clear because obviously 5 games in a week, I have 2 days to do it. 2 games is good, right? No, according to Neil, I was supposed to get all 5 games done by Friday at the end. He calls me up. I'm literally, they had boarded the plane. They're boarding the plane. I'm in line to board the plane. Neil calls me up. He's like, did you get your games done? I was like, yeah, I got them. And he said, Khaled said you only did 2 games. And I was like, well, yeah. He's like, I thought it was only going to be 2 games. And he's like, you have to do 5 like everyone else. And I'm like, I'm not going to do 5. And he's like, where are you right now? It was the first like question he asked. I'm like, how the hell do you like fucking know? But he probably can hear them.
He's got your location on.
And I was like, I'm driving. I think I said I'm driving my,
stop,
my parents.
For years, I thought you were driving.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought you were driving my parents. I didn't know you were flying.
Mm.
Yeah.
Driving my parents. And I'm just like, I'm not going to tell him how to flight to Vegas.
No.
And he's like, get your fucking ass back to the office right now. And I'm like, or you won't have, and he's like, or you won't have a job on Monday. And I'm like, well,
Vegas doesn't wait for anybody.
I was like, well, I'm not coming back. I get on that plane. I start typing up a message to HR. And then,
which didn't exist at the time.
Yeah, well, we had an HR person.
Mark Mitchell. Yeah.
No, it was,
no,
it was
Kurt.
Oh, okay.
No, no. What's her face?
Mm, oh, Lee.
Lee. Yeah. Lee was our HR person.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Lee. Who then, she got fired.
Well, I wanted to tell Neil's story about the Parker purchase. The big screen.
Yes.
I feel like that story's pretty good.
It's right there.
I think
that's
fair. I think that's
Parker
fair. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so there's Parker. That big, massive TV. You guys can't see it on YouTube, but it's like an 80-inch. No, that's like 140-inch, whatever the hell big that thing
it's
is.
Big,
like big touchscreen Microsoft Surface thing. Yeah. And this was in startup mode. Everyone's grinding 6 games a night. You Mardi Gras in. Don't even have snacks in the office. Coffee's not free. It is like a fucking grind. Like every dollar is counted. And we, for whatever reason, get free tickets to the baseball game, the Reds game. And we get like these nice tickets and the whole office gets to go. The boys are buzzing. There's free food, drinks. It's one of the best experiences we've got. Neil is buzzing at this thing. And there's already been conversation around getting the Microsoft Surface that's in the market of like $10,000, which everyone who's working is like, we can't do that. I just paid $20 for coffee in the office and the fees. Like, we can't do that. All this is happening. Reds are taking an L. I come back to the office after because I'm still in my grind set. And Neil is back there with Mark Mitchell, who is our accounting guy at the time. I don't know what he was, whatever he was. Mark Mitchell is the accounting guy who looks at the numbers. And Neil comes back. The boys are buzzing, okay? I think Neil had a couple Millers, which is fine. And then he comes back, and he's like, hey, let's buy the Microsoft Surface. And then Mark Mitchell's like, what? He's like, well, let's buy the Microsoft Surface. He's like, let's just get it right now. Let's order it. And he's like, do we have a credit card that gets to that? And he's like, just put it on it. And then we buy the Microsoft Surface, and now we've had it ever since. It was a drunken purchase.
And the best thing is, so it's utterly useless. And
I didn't want to say that.
Within days, 2 or 3 days.
Oh, yes, you're right.
It was the Surface 2.0 yes. was announced. It was obsolete like 2 days after we purchased it. There must have been some guy in the Microsoft office in like where
Dude,
Eastgate
celebrating.
Or whatever it was. Yeah, like I got rid of this 25 grand piece of crap 2 days after it was, or 2 days before it was worthless.
We couldn't log into it for the first month.
Yeah. Most expensive drunk purchase I've ever witnessed live.
Oh.
And with an accounting person as a second like kind of hand.
Yes, amazing.
In our old studio. So that was like the background in the old studio, and we were always trying to figure out ways to use it. Like, can we make this interactive? Can we make it a touchscreen? And every time we tried, it was like, no, this is just not as useful as we thought. So it became basically our background. Like,
so
here's our logo.
Tyler brought up one story that you should tell is the time where you snuck yourself to the combine so that Neil didn't know you were there.
Oh, yeah, me.
And then sat there in the lobby
when he walked by. Yeah, yeah. So that first year, I wasn't allowed in on the combine.
Yeah.
And that was when I was still doing like the daily revenue numbers for our subscription business and all of that stuff. And Neil was like, pretty much like, dude, if we don't make it, you know, to our certain goal or whatever it was, like, you're not going fucking anywhere. Right. Like, okay, fair enough. Like, yeah, I'm the one on my back. It's all me. Anyway, what ends up happening is I go anyway,
mm-hmm.
and I don't even stay with you guys.
Right.
I have a buddy who lives in India, and I'm like, dude, I'm just going to stay.
You do the smart thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go. He won't know. I'll stay somewhere else. He'll never see.
Yes.
And then what did you do?
I walked into the lobby where all you guys were because I was getting kind of bored, and I wanted to see you guys. And then literally Neil looks me dead in the face. He's like, did we hit our goal? And I'm like, he's like, did we hit our goal? I'm like, freaking out. I was like,
The problem was, is I knew we didn't. You know, I could have said like, oh, you know, we didn't. I was just like, oh, I don't know yet. I'll have to check. And he's like, he was steaming, dude. Absolutely steaming. I'm surprised I survived that night. Yeah. Honestly. He's got a temper, man. That guy gets hot fast.
Yes, everyone's got a Neil Tepper story.
Say something nice about Neil, so we have like a compliment sandwich okay. or something yeah. like that. He founded the company.
Founded the company.
He's the reason
we all had some yeah. ups and downs, and
he's the reason we're all here.
Yeah,
he's the reason we're all here.
I mean,
we all got to work in football. I mean, look, some people are wondering why we have some people leaving, and I think there's various reasons or whatever. But you know, Austin, this became a bit of a stepping stone for you.
Oh, Mike, for sure.
I think you're gonna go. You know, crush it wherever you go. Do whatever you do. Dr. Eager in the chat has used us as a stepping stone to go to something else. So, mm-hmm. I think that's just where we are. Maybe as the lifespan here of PFF at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this about Neil: you don't do what he did if you're not a little crazy, right? Like yes. you can't build a football company from England
as an American football company. It started as a hobby.
As a hobby.
I don't know that. I don't know how much people know about it, but like he bankrolled the thing by himself yeah. as a hobby for the first while, right?
Dude.
And then it started to generate some revenue. But like the initial run was all him bankrolling this thing mm-hmm. out of his own pocket to keep guys like me and Ben Stockwell, like the original group, mm-hmm. doing games as opposed to like going away and, you know, earning money doing a job. Like he kept this thing alive until it started to make some money, and then until, you know, Chris comes in and buys the company. That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't do what he did unless you're a little crazy, and also unless you care. Like, he cared yeah. about this, about us, more than anyone I've ever met at PFF.
Always kept his hands in the mud, too. He was taping games, which is, like, one of the low-level things you can do, and, like, you're, like, a part-time intern or right. whatever, and, like, he was always doing that. So, yeah, he's a fucking grinder.
The one thing I just want to add about that, because most people don't get to see this side of it, right? We are working... People know we're working with every NFL team, all 32. We're at 131 now out of 133.
Who's the last two?
Level. We can't mention who the last two.
You can't mention the last two?
Not until, no, like the.
That's brutal. Did we get San Diego State?
The last two.
Well, mention all the 131.
Did we get San Diego State?
They are one of them, yeah.
Let's go.
So there's two left. There's two left. We have every FBS team. We're at about 45 FCS teams that all get our entire data package and everything. And so, you know, PFF has legitimately changed the game on that end, right? And people don't get to always see that. So I just wanted to plug that really quickly. Like, we get, you know, constant feedback. We have a team that's going out there helping every single team integrate our stuff into their workflow. And it's, you know, PFF data and everything has, you know, changed the game with how they prepare, how they scout, and everything they do.
What's your sort of favorite takeaway, Mike? Because you came into PFF at an interesting time, which is, you know, after that first group had been around for a while, mm-hmm. we reached this point where we started to have revenue, started to bring in more people, started to hire. You were a couple of years after the Steve, Rick group
yes,
of people?
2 years, I believe.
And then you were like the sort of second wave of guys that got hired. But it was early enough in the process that you still had to do the sort of traditional PFF route of grind through PP, become analysis, mm-hmm. you know, work your way up that way, and then went to whatever path you went on. So what are the things that stand out from like where you started to how things are now, like the landscape?
I mean, analytics didn't exist back then. It's crazy to like think about, but it didn't, right? You know, EPA, you know, any advanced stat, they didn't exist. Like this, it started with PFF. If you hear anything basically outside of, you know, your normal counting box score stats that you get, like that was us, is I think the biggest thing. And now it's just become part of the lexicon, is that that's, you know, people are talking about running backs the way we talked about running backs 5 years ago now. You know, people are talking about the things we've been saying for, you know, Steve's study about tackles, left tackle versus right tackle. Like those things have just become a part of, are so normalized now that it's been so cool to see that we fought so hard for those early on. And now it's just like, if people push back more on the people who don't talk the way we talk than the people who talk like traditional football guys.
After we did that grind, 2014, got the whole first year done, we actually had draft content for the 2015 NFL draft. And that was it was a cool time, right? We have grades, we have these different things. But you mentioned now you get to be a mock draft influencer, right? Now we have this draft board, mock drafts, and the whole thing where you know, we're a part of the conversation where early PFF, it was like, hey guys, look at us. We're looking at the game a little bit different. We're trying to do some new stuff.
What do you remember about that first year? Because we were talking about it a little bit yesterday. We had all this data and we had no idea what any of it meant, right? So you had to kind of basically put a stick in the ground and say, this is how we're going to treat this year one, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to assume that PFF grades is really important. You're missing a whole bunch of players that were amazing guys in college just because they didn't run, you know, an X40. And now it turns out that actually, you know, it's a bunch of stuff that the NFL was doing that kind of matters quite a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, we had some very obvious misses year one. But then we had some hits that were just, you know, that just don't happen every year, whether it was Grady Jarrett, whether it was, what's his face?
Trey Flowers.
Yep. That are just like massive wins. That's a fourth and a fifth rounder that if you can identify those guys every year, you're an awesome franchise, you know? So I think we've influenced the NFL decision-making to a degree also with Ultimate and like their ability to see that. But I think the NFL and us have kind of are converging to a degree in the way we view draft prospects.
What was your take? Because you came in later, you didn't have to go like the data grind route as much. What's your sort of view on the whole thing?
The view on PFF's presence in the NFL?
You know, the standout kind of differences between now and when you first showed up here?
Yeah, I started as a part-time data collector in 2016, last year at San Diego State, and I did special teams PP and Tuesday mornings at like 4 a.m. or whatever it was, and then I got a full-time offer after that first year of doing it, so I wasn't in there for a while. I think that what I do feel has changed from like a media perspective, I don't know how much, like the NFL has obviously adopted analytics more and more and more, and that's been a slow grind. But even with like how media is discussing NFL prospects in the draft, but also like just NFL in general, fourth down, you know, going for it on fourth down, all that stuff has definitely changed. I think PFF was a first mover on a lot of that stuff in terms of like pushing that initial rock or getting that snowball rolling. And now it's like moving so fast that it's almost like nerdy to even bring it up. It's like, oh, that doesn't matter anymore. Like people are like overcorrecting and stuff. So yeah. I don't know. I think it's a big, like the snowball is now moving. And I think people are trying to figure out what the hell to do with it now.
Any other stories or anything we want to connect with? Or we're gonna talk a little bit about this year's draft at some point.
I will say the other weird thing from PFF beginning till now was everyone was remote back then.
Like yeah.
2012, to 2015, so I started, June 2012, till it was April 2015. I had not met a single person from PFF in person.
That combine, there was a combine where everyone sort of met each other for the first time, like in person, where we'd all, the whole company was remote, because obviously Neil and a bunch of us were in the UK, the guys that we brought on, you.
2013 was the first combine, we all together,
right, so there was a combine where a bunch of people actually went for the first time. I think they'd done one before that where it was like Neil and
somebody else. I went to the previous
one
with me, Neil, and Brian Hall.
But the next one was a few more people, which is where everyone sort of met for the first time, which was weird, bizarre. Like that first year, in my brain, people got – because that was the first time anyone had seen your ridiculous freakish size for the first time, right?
And in my mind – You're still
intimidated. Yeah. In my mind
– I am.
Everybody got lumped into two categories, Steve Height – and not Steve Height. And it turned out the next year, like subsequently when I met people again, not Steve's height was a wild range of like your size to 6'3" people. Mm. We're all in the non-Steve Height category.
The Steve Height tier has to be like, what, you? I don't know, who else is in there?
No, it was just him. It was Steve Height and then everyone else.
Who's the random media guy you always pointed out that's...
There is, yeah, there's that size. One guy. I haven't seen him for a while, though.
I do miss that when the
guy.
You've outlasted him.
The peaks of the office experience at PFF, where there were a lot of just incredible culture moments. But when we used to go to the Y and play basketball.
Cincy Y,
go to the Cincy Y and do some one-on-ones.
I miss
dude.
Those games
George
a lot.
Chihiri, like, punting a ball over to the window.
Mad.
We lost, a game against some randos.
I miss those games a lot. That's also, that's the first time since small single digit child period where I have been the worst person in the room by a mile. Because it was literally the first time I'd ever played basketball, picked up a ball. Yeah. And so for however long we were playing, 6 months or whatever, I had to grind through from being the worst person in the room by a distance to just getting passable.
For sure.
Just don't stand out as the worst person here. The worst thing was
active on D though.
You gotta bring hustle if you're bringing nothing else to the table. But the worst things were like, you're playing offense, right? You're in space. You have an open shot. Somebody has the ball, looks your way, sees it's you, and goes somewhere else. And the thing is, you're like, yeah, it's right. That's the correct decision. Yeah. You can't even argue with it. I'm like, I've been in games where I've seen that person. I've never been that person before, and it sucked.
Fair. You started hitting some shots at the end. Yeah, so that Cincy Y went from like, hey, let's go get in shape, run around, break a sweat, to like people being
Neil's
like,
oh, a big
I was 1-3 today.
Guy.
This is terrible.
Neil's like a big gym rat. Yeah. And there was a moment where he was like incentivizing everyone to go at lunch, and everyone would fucking want.
Yeah, we'd clear out the office, go play, and have some fun.
I miss those games.
You guys have any hot takes for the draft before you leave? Mike, get all your takes out before you leave, and then we're going to break down Maurice Jones-Drew.
Yes,
my favorite mock draft.
Was this a segment for you guys on Tailgate?
Yeah, every year.
Kind of Christmas almost.
It's kind of tame
this year. It is tame this year, which is unfortunate, but I have some takes.
You have to get pretty deep into this draft before the crazy comes out.
Well, let's jump right into it. Maurice Jones-Drew, he's got his mock draft over at NFL.com. What stands out to you guys so far? He's got, starts with number one. Anthony Richardson's going to the Carolina Panthers here. Process for MJD? Has he explained it?
Looking at process here, and I like looking at the analysis of these because I think Mojo, I'm just going to say, I don't think Mojo's writing these. Could be like a combination of ChatGPT and a couple interns, who knows? But when you look at pick two, in the second sentence, Stroud has much more size than Young, which steers the Texans towards the former Buckeyes. Like, is that his take, or is like his opinion of the Texans maybe steering away? I don't know. But I do like that it's like I think the NFL site uses Mojo as a change of pace back in the mock drafting space. And he does offer a change of pace, because you will not find a serious mock drafter putting anyone but Bryce Young at one right now. No, you're not going to do it.
Nobody that's prognosticating. Like,
exactly.
People that are saying what I would do might have it.
But I like Mojo late in his career as a change of pace back, I think makes sense.
So Anthony Richardson won to the Panthers. That puts Stroud number two to the Texans. And then the Colts trade up from 4 to 3 to get Bryce Young.
The big news, by the way, the big news today with Stroud was his S2 score. A bunch of them were leaked to Bob McGinn. Stroud, 18th percentile is his number.
Look, we just had Brandon from S2 on the show.
Did you?
A couple weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
We broke it all down. If you're seeing this overall, go listen to the interview.
Now,
first of
he
all,
made
but
a
the,
point.
The percentage, go ahead.
Number one, he made a point of saying there's a lot of misinformation out there right now. Some scores of people saying this guy was there, that are not even in the ballpark of being true, right? So this series of leaked numbers, any one of them could be bullshit, or all of them could be bullshit. Who knows? He also made the point of, look, this is not 18th percentile relative to us idiots. Like, this is 18th percentile of NFL prospects. So it's at least like, let's raise the bar a little bit from the guy's not a walking moron, like, or a guy that, like, you know, the ball flies his direction, it takes him 3 seconds to register, it's even in the air. This is not what we're talking about here. It is 18th percentile relative to NFL prospect.
Have you guys taken those tests at all?
No.
They are – I took one, and I do think it's interesting because a lot of the ones that, like, maybe apply to quarterbacks, I can see it. It's like you have to track dots on a screen.
Yeah.
And then once you get to 4 and 5 dots, which is like 4 and 5 wide receivers or 4 and 5 linebackers or whatever, like defenders that you have to keep track of, some people just, like, I just felt myself lose it. Like, you just, like, none of the dots. Like, you feel that in sports sometimes too, when you're just like, maybe not baseball, but maybe like basketball, where it just, like, it just moved too fast.
I felt
and you kind of, like, you get that panicky.
Right. That's the thing. That's the board, the panicky. It's the quantifying that thing, I think, that's always been a huge part of sports, where there are some people that always have time because they can do that. They can
track
when
it it's all
gets in their brain, it doesn't overwhelm them, and they can still act like it's just one thing they're tracking and everything's fine, and they can always adjust to whatever's happening without seeming panicked. And then you have other people, and I was in this category, where when it starts to overwhelm you, you panic and you can only do like plan A. Mm-hmm. Plan B, no, dead. So that it's I think it is starting to quantify that thing, which has always just been an intangible.
Yeah.
Well, this guy's good under pressure. But that's what it is. That's why.
I want to know what Zach Wilson's S2 score is. Then I'll make a judgment.
There's a quote from an executive that says Stroud scored an 18. That is like red alert. You can't take a guy like that. That's why I have Stroud as a bust. That in conjunction with the fact to name one Ohio State quarterback that's ever done it in the league. I just think it's hilarious because the NFL has so much data, right? And it's all about the film, and you grind the film, and you spend hundreds and thousands of hours evaluating those guys, and they think as binary as we think sometimes. Bad score, bad. Good score, good. Right? I mean, like, I used to make fun of baseball scouts all the time, like, this guy's got a great arm, he throws 95. I'm like, yes, my 4-year-old can look at 95 and say that's a good fastball, but that's what they lean on at the end. Score says 18, bad. Forget about, throw everything out the window.
I mean, how much of that is just like cutting corners and trying to make the process easier? Like, I don't know. I think that
I think a lot of it is also, though, like just articulate, like, because, you know, he's being asked, what do you think about this? So he's like, 18, that's bad, can't have it. Like, you're not going to.
And then he says he's a bust. Also, no Ohio State quarterback's ever made it.
That part is like dumb.
Yeah. No, those are overly simplistic things. Yeah, when we know that teams are in a draft room and CJ Stroud comes up and scouts have, and you sit there for hours talking about one player, breaking down all the good and the bad. It's never oversimplified like the way it is.
The take I have on that too, and this, I don't even know how like related this is necessarily, but I do think some of that binary thinking can come from ownership. And when ownership gets involved and it's like, well, I sat down with him and shook his hand, I think this guy's fucking got it. And like, but that to me can, like, imagine if Chris comes down and he's like, hey, I think we should change the name to PFF NFL show or to podcast, or say we should call it just NFL Lose the PFF. You're not going to push back that hard, man. He's the owner, dude. You're just going to be like, yeah, I kind of like it too. That's how it's going to kind of go. Like, I think that when you're like a new head coach or a new GM, and the GM, the owner comes down, he's like, hey, I kind of like Bryce over CJ Stroud. It's like, me too. I can get on board with that. Not my fucking call. You write the checks.
But I think like there's certain things where there are like red flags in the sentence. Like, as soon as the guy says, oh, no Ohio State quarterback's ever done it, you're like, okay, immediately I'm no longer listening to anything you're saying because this is absurd. Like, that is a dumb take. And if you're connecting that to other things, like, I just no longer value your opinion. Yeah, that was sufficiently stupid that I'm out on whatever you're saying. But I think there's a world where, like, if you're being asked about a random guy, right, you're not going to give the guy, like, obviously your thoughts on him are going to be layered, nuanced, and it's going to take a while. But like, if somebody says, hey, what's your take on CJ Stroud? You're going to give like the first thing of scares me because of this.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously you have more to your thoughts than that, but that's the thing that you're going to use to sort of get the point across in 5 seconds.
And the point on the test that Brandon kept making is just like a PFF grade, just like we would never say, this guy had a 92, therefore he's great. This guy had a 70, therefore don't draft him. He said the same thing. If you have a good test or a bad test, it's about the how, the what specifically, and it might just be certain parts of the test lead to certain levels of performance where you just, you know, avoid certain plays, avoid certain concepts or whatever it is. There's nuance to all of this. It's never just this number.
But the big concern with Stroud would be, again, if this is true, right, if he is in the 18th percentile of this S2 test, it also does tally with he was bad under pressure last year outside of the Georgia game. Like, you connect those two things, and all of a sudden, now you've got a pattern starting to emerge, and that is enough to potentially scare you away from
him. So we're out on Stroud.
Well, he's a bust. Have you ever seen Ohio State quarterback ever have success?
Never.
I'm not even sure it's like just pressure. It's just like out of rhythm with CJ Stroud. When it's kind of, you know, rhythm's great. Like, he's elite in rhythm. But it's just kind of, you have to be a little more creative or a little more, again, like, things breaking down. You have to track a little bit more than what was just handed to you from the snap.
And some of that is that offense again, which is like the entire approach to that offense over the last couple of quarterbacks has been drop back, stare down the target, wait till he's open, hit him. And they do that a ton, and they're really good at it, but you need more than that.
My concern with Stroud is I think he ends up the Derek Carr discourse, the Kirk Cousins discourse, I think Jared Goff, I think he just ends up in this category where he'll have, if everything is pristine around him, I think he's accurate, and he'll deliver, and he could be really good. If things are bad, though, fan base is going to be like, oh, this guy can't carry us. But that's, like, to me, that's okay on a first contract, right? On a first contract, Jared Goff level of play.
I think it also
depends
on the roster that you have at the time, right? If you have a roster that's in place, like the Lions or something, where you think you can win with that rookie contract, then it makes more sense. But if you're a team like the Houston Texans or obviously the Carolina Panthers, where you don't feel like that roster is there yet, that's where I think you swing a big bat on Anthony Richardson. It's like, hey, I got to compete with Mahomes. And if I hit on this and it does reach that range of outcomes that is Mahomes level talent, elite level talent, the athleticism, the Fields level runs, that works for me, and the roster can figure it out later. Now, if you're further along in your roster development and you've hit on some picks and the cap situation's fine, then I think not settling, but opting for a rookie contract Stroud or a rookie contract whoever, I think that does make more sense.
I will say, or I'm just curious, because I think Baker Mayfield has a lot of the same concerns that like Stroud might have. I would wonder what Baker Mayfield's S2 score is, actually.
Yeah.
Because he's very much one where at Oklahoma, when he was confident, when it just like didn't have to be anything outside of the easy layups that he was hitting, it was just money.
I'll pass along the anecdotal stuff that I've heard, because there's other tests besides S2. There's personality tests. There's all these other psychological types of tests, like all these other things. And supposedly on certain tests, there were concerns for Baker Mayfield, right? The things that we never saw. We saw the
breathalyzer. On-field
stuff. There was, well, concerns for Baker Mayfield, but then a guy like Josh Allen, they were, you know, they were like, yeah, this guy, he's going to get, because they're trying to figure out who's going to get better, right? Who's going to become, how did Mahomes and Brady and Breeze and Rodgers, how, they all had obstacles to overcome, whatever that was, draft position or arm or height, or, and they all overcame obstacles, whatever it may have been. You're trying to, that's the guy you really want.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to predict that. So there may have been tests out there that predicted, hey, look, Josh Allen, personality-wise or whatever, could be one of those guys who does it. Baker Mayfield might not be. So the NFL's trying. They're privy to these things that we're not.
When I was at the Combine this year, I was working on a piece talking through with GMs, coaches, scouts, the whole threshold things. Like, does he have to have 30-inch arms? Does he have to have, you know, 280 pounds to play this position or whatever? And what the conversation continued to go to is, like, we don't really think of, you know, Martin Mayhew of the Commanders and these different GMs, the Bengals GM, Duke Tobin. Everyone kept going back to, we don't have these thresholds for that, but, like, I want a guy that can get better and wants to get better. And everyone, I sometimes that gets thrown in. Mike does it all the time. That gets thrown into, like, oh, that's, like, kind of coach speak, GM speak, whatever, where you're like, I want a guy that wants it. But I do think that's what they actually care about. And that's why with Will Levis, I am thinking that these teams are going to be, like, in love with this guy because they think he has that. And I do think he's, like, a super tough player. And I talked to Liam Cohen, the offensive coordinator that was there before Rich Gangarello took over, and, like, everyone raves about, like, this guy wants it, wants to get better, you know, striving, striving, striving. And I think the NFL covets that enough, and that's why, you know, Levis is getting, you know, pushed into the top 10, even having the year that he had.
It's definitely a thing. Like, remember the one negative that anybody had about Trevor Lawrence was, like, does he really love it enough? He's got options. That guy could be something else. Yeah. He could do a career other than football and be fine. That was like, I don't know. Like, you know, compare that to some of these other quarterbacks that didn't need this game. Like, it's definitely a thing that the NFL still focuses on.
And they should want that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you only get 7 picks. You know, sometimes 10, sometimes 5. You only get a handful of picks. You should want the right guys and all that. So I get it. But then sometimes it's like you hear the same stories about Davis Webb. Like, oh, that dude, you know, he just wants it. He's in the film room 19 hours a day and all that stuff. It's like, all right, it doesn't matter. He can't, you know, throw the ball accurately. So,
like Jake Locker coming out. I remember the Gruden. I saw the clip of him getting drafted. Gruden's like, this guy's going to go to war. And he retires 4 years into his career. You know, like, he didn't go to war at all. The dude left the battlefield.
Good luck. I
do think it's something that scouts, GMs, coaches covet. I do think it's something hard to gauge. Yes, right? It's hard to, like, say, like, oh, no, that's for sure.
That's why Josh McDaniels drafted Tim Tebow in the first round as his first pick. This is my quarterback. Tebow reminds me of Tom Brady because he wants it.
Well, particularly, like, when money arrives. I mean, it's a different, like, how much do you want the money and how much do you want the football.
I was talking with a coach in the offseason talking about, like, a recent draft pick that was struggling, and I was like, oh, like, how's this going? Like, kind of off the record and stuff. And it's like, I just need to figure out what he wants. Like, what does this guy want in order to get better? And I feel like that happens a lot with these draft busts. And I've been one of those people who's like, teams fail players, not players. But I think when you get into the situation, how a player can fail himself is if you don't fucking want it. And, like, you don't show up and you don't do these different things.
Any other do you have any MJD mock draft takes that you just want to bring to the table instead of me just going through it?
I don't have any takes. I did like his analysis for Kalijah Kansi, number 27 of the Buffalo Bills. This talented, explosive interior rusher lands with a team that loves to get after the quarterback. It's a great fit. So, I mean, I do agree that
you can't argue with the
logic. I do agree that Bills like to get after the quarterback, and I do agree.
They're the one team that likes to get after.
That's a great fit. Now, my assumption is that they're trying to fit Kalijah Kansi in the first round. They had that analysis prepped. But Bill's landing on the chart.
You can't argue with the logic that pass rush goes to a team that likes pass rush. It fits.
Makes sense
to
me.
Great fit.
He copied my mock going John Michael Schmitz to the Giants at 25.
Ooh. Trendsetter.
Talk to me, Austin, about Tyree Wilson over Will Anderson Jr. We just did our edge rankings yesterday. We've done that conversation quite a lot. Renner's given his take. Where are you?
I'm not there with Tyree Wilson over Will Anderson Jr. Now, there is, and we were talking about this before we were recording, like, there is a conversation where the size, length, potential with Wilson is something you're buying over maybe what you see as a ceiling with Will Anderson. I think he's going to get a lot better in the NFL. I don't understand why, because he doesn't have the same arm length or he's not as big or whatever, doesn't mean he can't also get a lot better. When you turn on his tape and look specifically against, like, his run defense and stuff, I feel like how much he got better over the course from his, you know, 2021 season to his 2022 season. I think Will Anderson is not getting enough credit for how much he's going to get better, because everyone's, like, talking about Anderson as, like, he's got the production, he's already done it, this is the guy that is a proven thing. It's like, yeah, he's a proven thing, and I think he gets better. Whereas Tyree Wilson's like, not a proven thing yet, but he's going to get better. I don't know. We apply to the whole improvement range of outcomes things to guys that are long and guys that are athletic. When, like, Will Anderson isn't, like, terribly short-armed or terribly inathletic, but it ends up being, like, since he's done it already, we start thinking he can improve.
We do this every year. They said the same thing about the Boses. Oh, they won't get better. That doesn't matter.
Well, the Joey Bosa one is what it's reminding me of. It's like people use the argument that, oh, he's maxed out. It's like, yeah, but he's already maxed. A Pro Bowl caliber player. Yeah. If this is as good as he gets, that's good. Like, if he gets no better than this whatsoever, it's a great pick.
And the guy behind him has to be twice as good to get to Bosa. That's what you want to bet on? That's rough. Yeah. So,
and Anderson, I'll say this about him. Alabama has been, they were very schemed defense. He was not given kind of just like, you know, in the NFL, a lot of teams will just give their edge guys or give like real playmakers, high end guys, freedom where it's like, hey, go make plays. That was not Will Anderson at all, and he still made plays. You know, he is not given that. Like Ohio State let the Boses do that, let Chase Young do that. That's why they were just so impactful at that level. But Will Anderson was kind of like a part of Alabama's scheme, not unique in his own regard. And he was still, you know, leading this class in sacks this past
year. Yeah, I think the stuff that people tried to argue last year for Trayvon Walker, I think is actually a better argument for both Nolan Smith and Will Anderson in terms of the defenses there that they were in didn't let them do the thing that you would want them doing if they were to maximize like their impact. Like they were at least shackled, restricted a little bit by their schemes, which was what people were trying to claim for Walker, but I don't think it was actually that true.
Bijan Robinson's going to the Eagles at 10. We know the history of the Eagles. They do not covet running backs up in the first round, but is this the year? Is this the year? Because they have two picks, because they have a Super Bowl caliber roster, icing on the cake, Bijan Robinson to the Eagles?
Well, why would you draft a backup running back in the first round? Todd Penny.
San Diego State Aztec.
Kenneth Gainwell, really.
More interesting part of Bijan going to the Eagles, I think, is Bijan's not even his top running back. Jahmyr Gibbs is his top running back, Mojo.
Him and Emery.
Oh, wow. Him and Emery Hunt both have.
MJD's got a thing for the smaller guys, though. He's got type.
Who's that?
MJD likes the small. He likes guys like him. He had such a unique body type.
Yeah, he was small and round, though.
The only person I've compared to MJD was Nick Chubb coming out. I said Nick Chubb's a taller MJD, the way he just
falling forced, ball.
Yes, yeah. You can't tackle this guy. I'm comfortable with that. MJD was in his own
world,
though.
Trying to think of like a physical comp for MJD. He looks like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man a little bit. No, the Michelin Man. He looks like the Michelin Man, just like with how he's built.
He's just round.
Or just wrapped around, like too much muscle and too much stuff wrapped around his bones.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make sense.
One of his first games, he like popped Sean Merriman in pass protection and was like, MJD, look at this guy.
Yeah.
He's awesome. He weird, hit the ground running.
Great player, but a weird awesome player.
Where's Bijan land, guys?
Where's I'll he say the go? Falcons. I'll say he goes 8 to the Falcons.
Really?
8 to the Falcons.
Yeah.
See, I'm starting to think, of all the quarterbacks that are going to drop, I'm starting to lean towards it's Anthony Richardson. And then I'm thinking, do the Falcons take him at 8? Are the Falcons that could be the best fit for Richardson, given how they ran their offense last year. I'm not saying that's how they want to do it going forward, but
I think that's like they want, though. Right? They just want, or how they're building right now is just outlier, like big athletes. And so, Bijan would be that. Anthony Richardson would be that. Tyree Wilson, Christian Gonzalez would be that, but they just traded for Jeffrey Okuda. So I think that's where they're going as a roster, which I can't hate on.
I mean, we said it right at the start of the process. I would love Richardson in that offense. Like, that would be insane.
MJD has the Jets taken Osiris Torrance, the guard from Florida, at 13. That's the highest I've ever seen him. I don't look at a ton of mocks, but that's the highest I've seen for Osiris Torrance. Last year at this time, I feel like we were all mocking Kenyon Green from Texas A&M. We were all putting him in the 20s, like give him to the Bucks or the Bills, and all of a sudden he goes at, 14 to the Texans last year? Could Osiris Torrance be a guard that goes in the top 15 when maybe it's a little unexpected here?
Well, no, because they have two guards, the Jets. They have Elijah
Vera Tucker can move to tackle. He's going to move to tackle. MJD is going to move.
Well, let's look at what he said. The Jets continue to build their offensive line with a monster in the interior who will help protect Aaron Rodgers, assuming the trade gets done during a deep playoff run.
Yeah.
Okay. Can't argue with that. Here's a question. What is your favorite analysis in this
draft? No, it's Cansey for sure. I did also like Hooker. going to the Vikings at 23.
Okay, what's that?
Hooker gets a redshirt year to get completely healthy and learn behind Kirk Cousins before becoming QB1 and leading Kevin O'Connell's offense. I feel like that's a good Hooker blurb with some Vikings keywords. It's the good. SEO's good. I like the SEO.
It's a good one, but yeah, let me tell you what the greatest blurb and analysis in this draft is. Pick number 15, the Green Bay Packers select Zay Flowers, Boston College wide receiver. Quote, I sure hope the Packers finally select a playmaking wide receiver in the first round to aid their young quarterback.
See, that just explains the entire process, right? He's having a good time, and I respect that. I respect a good time with a mock. At this point in the process, people don't want to see Bryce Young at one every single time.
Just having fun. We're just here, like you guys.
Just having a good
like
time.
Like tailgate.
Just having a good time.
That's why we celebrate every year when it's mock.
Oh, man. What else we got here? Keon White goes in the – Keon White's been invited to the draft.
Yeah, it's wild.
Is he going in round one? Did you hear Sam's comp for him? Polar bear with a helmet on.
Yeah. I think I settled on a bull at the end of it.
Oh, bull. Yeah, reminds me a lot of those,
the bullfighting bull, you know, to the point where, like, you know, those they get distracted by, like, rodeo clowns. Like, mm-hmm. as much as they're going to destroy you if they get a clean shot, like a guy in a stupid suit can just, like, run in front of it and go, running that way, and the bull's like,
okay.
Like, that's Keon White, right? He's running right at the quarterback, this manic, like, ball of destruction. But then, like, a running back can just, like, pop him in the knee and he's done.
I think in this class, though, back end of the first round, I could see it. I could see Keon White in the back end of the first round.
Yeah, certainly. Like, when you get into that group, I'm, like, referred to them as this giant swathe of beige yesterday. Like, these guys are just, But, like, you can definitely, I can see a world where you push Keon White above all those guys. So, above, you know, BJ Ojulari, above even Felix, like, that group, you could probably get him to like 5 or 6 in your rankings, depending on what you really covet.
Smart to just avoid pronouncing Anudike Uzama there. Just
Felix.
Avoid.
Thanks.
Just Felix.
Thanks.
Just
FAU.
Felix.
K-State Felix.
FAU, not
I'm not
college.
Doing FAU. I can't do that.
We brought up Torrance, and I was doing that measurables threshold stuff, and something that was interesting is that only Ed Ingram, who's the Vikings second-round pick from last season, he started some games this year. And then Ode Abushi, who spent last season with the Rams, been a journeyman for a bit. Those are the only two players that have vertical jumped less than 24 inches and played more than 300 snaps in a season over the last 5 years. Osias Torrance weighs a lot more than both those guys, but does fall into that under 24 inch tier. I don't know. I was looking at some of these things and like looking at explosiveness.
We looked at it a little differently too. So we said, where are the guards who are 6'5 or above, 330 plus pounds with 33.5 inch arms? So we looked at it differently. In that group, you have Quentin Nelson, John Jerry, Kelechi Osemele, Jamarcus Webb, Osiris Torrance is in there, Eric Flowers, DJ Fluker, Darrell Williams, Tyree Phillips, bunch of guys who have been successful. Mm-hmm. But we haven't, you know, without factoring in the vertical.
Yeah. I feel like one or other of you needs to create like a team with the worst measurable at every spot. Like the shortest armed player who's actually played snaps, the worst vertical jump who's actually played snaps, the worst 40 time that's actually played snaps. Like, what does that roster look like?
Orlando Brown.
Bad. We were going to try to do the podcast again, but it got shut down. And we were going to do building the worst player at each position.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that idea.
I don't have any of those notes, but those are brutal.
We built the worst quarterback. Like it was
Peter
fantastic.
Peter Skoronski's arms. And
it was great.
It was a good time.
Yeah. Certain Kyler Murray's height, what do we have?
Mike, we used to have fun making up scouting terms. We did the draft show. We did the PFF NFL podcast. We would do a draft episode every week where we'd have these little segments, make up draft terms.
Yeah.
One of those. I think it was the year I had the hot take about Corey Davis being a Hall of Famer. We were forcing hot
still
takes
time.
That year with bold predictions. And I said, yeah, Corey Davis going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, they made us do it like on the – like we were going live and they're like, hey, you're going to have it to start with a hot take. I'm like, okay, for the Sports Illustrated show. And
yeah.
It's like, okay, that's
Corey Davis is going to catch 1,000 balls.
Top 10 go to the receptions Hall of Fame. All time.
Like, forget Larry Fitzgerald.
Oh, that's a good question for Mike. What is the – each one of us has one. Like, mm-hmm. Steve's is Hall of Famer Corey Davis, even though it was, like, designed as a hot take that's just saddled around his neck. Mine has obviously been the Tom Brady has done thing. What's the take you have that hangs around
Jerry
your neck?
Jerry Tillery.
Millstone.
Oh, yeah.
Top 10 player in 2018.
Jerry, I think he was top 5.
No, he wasn't top 5. I also had Jeffrey Simmons top 10 player of the year. So –
I wrote a full.
You can't Chris offset Jones, it. Too. You're coming off Chris Jones.
But Tillery just, I mean, he's a unique case, we'll say. Yeah. it may not have been on field.
Unique case. When he first signed with the Raiders, I think there was a quote from Max Crosby that was like, he's an odd cat. Like, I think everyone has had that same quote on Tillery, whoever has met him. It's like, yeah, it's an odd dude. I'm not saying that's directly, you know.
We had a heads up on that before the draft and maybe ignored it.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
I was in the ignore stage for sure. My worst take, I wrote an entire article on why Justin Jefferson, you shouldn't go long on him being like a legit outside receiver.
Can't play
a
lot outside.
Yeah. It was rough. It was like, going back and reading it, it's like disgusting.
How come that's not a thing? Why doesn't anybody know about that?
No, it's been old takes exposed. Freezing cold takes or whatever that thing's called. Yeah. Yeah. And well, honestly, good. It's so fair. Like the analysis is just ass.
You got to learn. You got to learn, funny, Austin. Though, you got to use qualifiers.
The worst thing is, so that's the thing. Like, you have one where the analysis is ass and the conclusion, therefore, is terrible and you look like an idiot.
Yeah.
I went back, like, I've reread the Brady thing multiple times over the last 15 years that he's like made it look stupid since I posted it. The analysis is actually okay. It's just the conclusion ends up being wrong.
What's hilarious is I have a tweet, if you want to go check it out, that's just, this is a Justin Jefferson fan account from when he was playing outside receiver like the year prior. And like, he was doing some good things. And then he moved into the slot. I was like, I just don't see this translating. I can't believe this guy. This guy sucked at whatever it was.
I think I comped him
to a more athletic Cooper Kupp, though, in the end. And I don't know.
I think that's not bad.
You know, I think I just botched that article. I was going for hot takes.
I will say I'm very thankful that for like my first 3 years at PFF, I just didn't tweet or like barely wrote. I was just watching and learning about football because I would have just said just the dumbest shit.
The Brady thing is the one that hangs around my neck, but there's no way that is even in the top five dumbest things I've said during the time at PFF. Like, if people actually dug through the receipts, I'm sure they'd find way worse than that. Ones where the analysis was not sound to begin with, and you just ended up getting screwed by a guy ending up, you know, reversing his career and putting 10 more years of the
Someone stuff. Mentioned in the YouTube chat your J.J. Arcega-Whiteside.
That was bad, but he wasn't like that high. I at least had DK Metcalf, wide receiver one that year, A.J. Brown, wide receiver two.
I was good.
Yeah, we had DK and A.J. As a
never
would
have drafted J.J.
We all did
technically.
That. By the way, the PFF draft board is getting it's not just going to be your draft board at the end of the day. We're taking in some other opinions. Tanner McKee's going to drop a little bit.
So you might want to sell.
I assume that's a comment in the chat box that Tyler has posted there, but from a guy called Red Skeleton who said, I first started watching years ago and Renner would barely utter words and Sam seemed like he was being forced to partake. That sounds about accurate.
You've grown. You have grown as an analyst.
When there was a time where it was me and Steve basically doing the podcast and anything forward facing, and we needed new people, right? We needed the next wave guys. So we did like basically auditions for people to see if they could talk, you know, and be acceptable on camera and whatever. And you started doing it. Were you doing it with Matt Klassen at that point?
You both got auditioned. Yeah.
But there was a period where you would talk at an Austin Gale rate that actually I had to go through and slow it down.
It was tough.
I had to like strip out your audio and like reduce it to 0.8 speed or whatever so that it sounded human.
I was so bad when I started. Like I had really bad like social anxiety. Like I didn't talk in class. Like I didn't talk in public. I was bad. So this is obviously a big change, but I remember my first radio hit. I wish I could find I have the clip somewhere in my email somewhere. It was the worst thing I've ever, I remember. So it was probably like 2014. Neil sends me over New Orleans radio, wrote about like Mark Ingram or something. And they're like, can we interview the guy that did this? And I was like, oh shit. Like, I don't know. Okay, Neil, I'll do it. I get on and then I had like what I was going to say prepared. Because they're like going to ask you about marketing. I had this whole thing prepared. They say, you know, hey, Mike, thanks so much for coming. Or they ask me a question right away. And I start answering the question. And I'm like, oh, but thanks for having me on. And then I start answering the question again. I was like, no.
I've had some bad
videos. I remember hanging up, leaning back in my chair, and just being like, what did I just do? Oh, it was legitimately like painful for me.
When Sam and Steve first started letting me do some of the voiceovers for the NBC contract, you remember when
seven
you,
dead, yeah, 18 I was
like,
injured.
I was like reading like the like this running back went up the middle for a 10-yard gain. They're like, why does it sound like you're announcing a fire in a house? Like, I don't think that's that. And then like I listen back, like, oh man, can I aggregate some news?
Yes,
on this?
I see the news.
Break it.
NFL has suspended 5 players, including Lions wide receiver Jameson Williams, for violating the NFL gambling policy. Lions C.J. Moore and Quintez Cephas, plus Commander Shaka Toney, are suspended indefinitely, at least 1 year. And then Williams and Detroit's Stanley Berryhill are suspended 6 games. Oh, so Jameson's only out six games.
Okay. What is the
the wording of that tweet is ass. Sorry.
What is the differentiator there between that's a year long suspension for egregious gambling
violation? If it was a same game, no sweat, same game parlay.
The no sweat thing.
The no sweat.
So hold on. So CJ Moore, Quintez Cephas, Shaka Toney, they're suspended indefinitely, which means at least a year. The Calvin Ridley treatment.
Yeah.
And then Jameson Williams and Stanley Berryhill, 6 games.
Yes. I'm fascinated now by what
the difference is. Interested to hear what the difference is.
Was it on your own team versus a different team? Or
I found my first radio hit. Should I just play it into the mic here?
Yes.
Is this going to be bad?
What have we got?
Can we really?
Let's see.
Send it into the
file.
I have the file.
How did you find 2014 Saints? You have the file?
Yeah.
Why do you have the file?
I can't even find the time we interviewed Patrick Mahomes. I have that file.
I knew I was going to want it.
4 Lions players and 1 Commanders player. Was there a Lions syndicate? And then, like, was Jameson only in on a couple of the bets? I want to know how this differentiates.
Jameson Williams is a first-round players gambling. Come on, man.
That's a bad
foolish.
The Lions immediately have released Quintez Cephas.
I understand special teamers.
Yeah, special teamers need to make some side hustle money.
But they can't even impact. They can't impact the game, though. They got no way to.
No, they just need the money. Like, they're just gambling like the rest of us, trying to, you know, earn some side crust.
All right, here's my first radio hit.
Michael Renner from ProFootballFocus.com talking about the black and gold. Michael, thank you so much for the time. The Saints are one of 8-2-0 teams. Your thoughts on what you've seen out of the black and gold through the first 2 weeks of the season?
Just very impressed to get Saints for coming on today. last Sunday against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I was surprised they ended up pulling it out then. They have.
Are you sweating?
Their defense has been light years better than it has been last year, and I think they're one of the best teams in NFC right now, and I'm
stop it. This isn't you.
Oh, my God.
Very uncomfortable. Very
that was
uncomfortable.
Awful. That's, I told you. It sounds like you're on the elliptical, but also like a gun to your head.
So that's bad. The other good story that Tyler mentioned was when we used to do these hits on Sky TV in the UK, and Neil had it in his brain that you needed like British accents, you know, to do the Sky TV hit in the UK. They're going to want Brits. That makes sense. In actuality, I think the reverse is true. But anyway, so in his head, it was like me, who still had some vestiges of an Irish accent at that point, and Neil had to be the talent, right? And so we start doing these sort of prep things. And Neil on camera is a fascinating person because he can't handle... He's like the pressure thing we talked about, the S2 stuff, right?
Yeah.
When it's not exactly the way he has it planned in his head, it breaks down. He can't handle like the ad lib on the fly, right? So we did like a couple of rehearsals and whatever. And then one of them we were doing where he got pitched the question in a way that wasn't exactly the way he had it in his mind. And like stopped the rehearsal to go, no, you need to pitch it to me like this. And gave me like a word for word way to transition to him, right? So we're doing this. We got the earpieces in. Every now and again, the producer in the UK would come on. He'd say, you know, whatever, a little bit of instruction. So I'm answering this thing, and we're sort of the camera's there, big screen behind us. There's a little monitor over there that we can see things on. And so I'm wrapping up whatever answer. The guy comes in. The guy comes on the microphone, ends in the ear, goes, "Okay, wrap it after this answer." Neil turns to the monitor and says, "Okay." I'm answering the question, I'm like, what did he just do? And I'm calculating, like, this is happening in my brain whilst I'm trying to wrap up whatever sentence I'm answering at the time. I'm like, I have never, ever in my life seen a person answer the voice in their ear just on the fly. Not only that, but he turned to the monitor that didn't have them in it. It had us on it and answered it. Mind-blowing.
Hot. Yeah. Big tip here. Do not answer.
Don't answer the voice in your ear. Unless you're making it a bit.
Can I speculate on the difference in suspensions?
100%.
So
definitely a number of
Lindsay
teams
Jones of The Ringer just sent out a screenshot.
Oh, stop with the Ringer
stuff. The official release. And it says at the bottom of, like, you know, 6 games for whoever. The gambling policy, which is annually reviewed with all NFL personnel, including players, prohibits anyone in the NFL from engaging in any form of gambling in any club or league facility or venue, including the practice facility.
any form of gambling? Do you think they maybe were betting on the NFL?
Dave Burkett on Twitter. Plenty of details in here, but Jameson Williams was suspended 6 games for gambling on non-NFL games from an NFL facility.
So that's what I was speculating. Yeah, facility. He's freaking ripping some baseball parlays. That's fair.
Is it? Maybe it's just in like a fantasy baseball league or something like that.
And the Lions released 2 others who were found to have bet
6
on NFL
games for some fucking baseball parlays?
In the facility. That's obnoxious.
Could have been soccer.
Rough.
Did he say baseball?
Could have been. No, he didn't.
We just said non-NFL.
That's horrendous.
Could be NHL.
If these bets didn't hit, if the handle was low, there's going to be a lot of conversation.
Yeah, what if he's just like, just throwing some, $10, a little $10 action here.
There's
I'm
no
a first
point.
Rounder. I'm just,
he's
just
doing free bets. It wasn't even. He's just doing the free plays, and he got popped.
The most embarrassing thing that come out of this is if Jameson's unit size is $10. Yeah.
Not even that. If he just was using the $200, no sweat cash back deal, the introductory offer from whatever sportsbook he signed up with. That's terrible.
Rough.
I don't even think, I don't have a problem with that.
The NFL draft show 2 years ago when we're cranking it out. It's night 2. There's a million picks. We're trying to keep tabs on everything. And we slow down the entire show by bringing in Thomas Dimitroff.
That's
for
right.
An interview.
Oh, that's a great story.
And, and so, there's like 6 of us on set and all that stuff. And we were going to try, we couldn't figure out a way where we could all be a part of the interview. So only George could do the interview. So the rest of us were like, great, we're doing TV for 28 hours this weekend. We get a break, read Twitter, catch up and all that stuff. So they do the interview, finish the interview. And George looks at Mike. Mike, what are your thoughts? Live on the air.
What'd you say verbatim?
Watching.
I said, oh gosh.
What are your thoughts on what Thomas had to say, Mike?
I said, I'll be honest, I wasn't listening.
Yeah, it was honestly like shocking. I was shell shocked that you said that out loud.
Yeah, you try to make something up.
Yeah, you
BS,
make something up.
Like,
oh, honestly,
what did you repose the question? What did you think, George? You tell me, and you're just like, no, I don't know. Wasn't listening.
I wasn't listening. To what
I literally
saying.
Wasn't listening.
My favorite under the radar.
Nor were the listeners
from that show was that we kicked it to Ian Harditz because he was on his second stage.
Yeah.
And he did the complete wrong pick. He did analysis of Javonte Williams to like the Raiders, and like did the whole analysis. Kicks it back to us.
No one was listening.
And no one listened to him. Yeah,
it
wasn't until watching back later that I was like, he did the wrong pick.
When we were in the mini studio years ago, we had the mini studio. Only 2 of us were in there, and then everyone else was kind of like out on the couches, whatever. And we were trying to figure out picks, and somebody yelled out, "Christian Kirk to the Chiefs." And I go, I'm like, there it is, Christian Kirk, Chiefs. This great move. They already got a receiver earlier. And then somebody's like, no, it's the Cardinals. Man. Oh, okay.
Was that the draft that Renner – because Renner's birthday is always around the draft.
Yes.
And was that the draft where Neil is fuming because Renner's not in yet. And he's going to be here. Yeah. I think it was day 2, though. It wasn't day 1.
It was day 2.
It was day 2. It was Renner's actual birthday.
Yeah.
And Neil is losing his goddamn mind, like legitimately ready to kill everybody in sight. Renner rolls in with 230 racks. Absolutely. And he's like already shelled. And we're like, oh no. What's fucked is that if I did that, I think Neil would have me just outside pasture. Renner does. He's like,
Renner,
come on, Mike.
You got to push the boundaries. You got to have years of boundary pushing until.
Renner cultivated this unique space within PFF where he would take the piss so much that the regular things
it was an
he
expectation.
Did. Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. He lowered the bar of expectations to the point where he could then repeatedly violate like norms of work in a way that the rest of us couldn't, right? So anybody else that does any one of Renner's like transgressions would get like the full treatment, be ripped, be shat on, be potentially fired. Renner has lowered expectations so far that it takes something wild for him to even be in the discussion of being in trouble.
Let that be a lesson to all the kids listening. If you set expectations low enough, you'll always exceed them.
I mean, it's because you were a star player, Mike.
That helped.
It's because everything, because when you tried, it was really good.
Well, he was also very good at understanding the annual cycle of the PFF mood and knowing when to ask for things.
Yep.
Yeah, when to turn it up and when to ask for things off the back of having turned it up and therefore profit,
And when to disappear.
I keep circling back to the betting conversation. I think some people in the chat are talking about it. But what's your opinion of the NFL, specifically like every single show they do now is presented by FanDuel? I think FanDuel is the official sponsor of the NFL, and then you have DraftKings and all that stuff. But what's your opinion of no one affiliated with the NFL, even I think NFL Network employees, can leverage FanDuel at all, independent of sport, Is that not insane? I don't know. Is that they
have
crazy?
To? I mean, they have to separate the two.
But you can't even bet on baseball.
But that's but yeah. But where you draw that line, I think, is starting to get really.
I think that's
awkward.
It. I think like, that's weird that you can't even bet on other sports.
I think it's yeah,
they're purposely being overprotective.
Yeah.
Of but, that. But before too. They had this world where you know you had to be completely distanced, right? You mm-hmm. could never connect.
Can
the
you
NFL.
Play blackjack? I'm asking. Yeah. I don't know. I don't yeah. know.
But anyway,
gambling of any form.
They had this world where everything
in
had
the
to
facility.
Be,
it says from an NFL
oh,
facility.
You can't bring cards at the facility.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You had, to, but everything had to be so separate because you could never like potentially connect the NFL to gambling and match fixing and all that kind of stuff. So 100% separate. Now we're everything's getting legalized. The you know DraftKings, FanDuel's of the world are being opened up as these giant sources of revenue and sponsorship and all that kind of stuff. The NFL's leapt into that. So now it's like, oh crap. Well, like, where do you draw the line?
Yeah.
Because we're in bed with these people for sponsorship and all this kind of stuff, but obviously you can't match fix at the same time. So somewhere has got to draw the line. It feels to me that being able to gamble on your phone using a random app on baseball in the facility, I mean, to me that seems
how much
okay.
How much harder then does it become to regulate that though? Because then you're just checking whether or not like FanDuel's being leveraged. I don't know.
Well, that's what they're doing.
That's what they're doing.
They just don't want people logging into FanDuel from the facility.
Yeah, that's what they're doing.
You know, so I can't remember what we actually did when we did the PFF NFL Daily on the Calvin Ridley thing, and DraftKings was our sponsor. And it's like, hey, go bet on the NFL. Yeah. I can't remember if I actually did.
No, you did. People remarked on the segue of.
Look, we've been put in tough spots. Like I'm going to give you 5 minutes on Calvin Ridley suspension. I'm going to break it up with a nice little mid-roll on DraftKings and you know go gamble and bet and all that stuff. And we'll circle back and talk Ridley.
What's great now, too, is the hottest piece of journalism right now. Aaron Rodgers trade going to happen? It's none of that. It's what did J-Mo bet on? It's literally what everyone's chasing. Oh, I can't wait to find out.
I'm sorry. So I know you probably have to go work. Are you going to assign somebody? We're gonna go find it.
We're gonna go hunt that down.
Who do you get on the job there?
I can't reveal the sources.
How do you do this?
It's hard to say.
How's your job going? How's Bill Simmons?
Things are good. Yeah, Bill and I are good. Had some chats on San Diego State basketball. San Diego State basketball went deep this year, guys. I don't know if you guys know.
I saw that. Go Aztecs. I'm sad because UMass Lowell just missed the tournament.
Mm.
First time in history.
They were going
Xavier. That was rooting for Xavier, hometown team over here. But yeah, San Diego State made the move. That was great.
It's huge.
At that other sport that I don't watch. Hoops. Everybody likes it. People like it. People seem to like it.
I have heard that, yeah.
What else we got here? Mike did not get fired. Do you want to, any?
Closing thoughts, Mike?
Yeah.
Last closing thoughts. PFF run here?
Parting thoughts.
Parting thoughts. I love PFF. I want PFF to continue to grow. I want it to be the leader in the NFL space. I've always believed, I just think a better conversation around football, smarter fan is the goal, always been the goal, and I think we've accomplished it, and I think we'll continue to.
I mean, it's what, like, everyone put sort of little tributes or whatever on Twitter when you put your announcement yesterday. Like, just from a personal point of view, we'll miss you here. Like, you've been one of the established faces at PFF. You've carved yourself like multiple unique.
Is he in the
little,
Hall of Fame?
Yeah,
I'm a Hall of Famer.
Multiple little
Mike is a Hall of Famer. Yes.
Am unique. I in the Hall of Fame?
It's maybe.
Still for debate.
Still maybe.
It's still. TBD.
The votes that we're recounting.
Right, yeah. It's unsure.
We have to bend the rules for you, Austin.
Ambiguous status. But, you know, you've been one of the most important people at PFF since you came on board. Like, you've done an awful lot of interesting things. So we'll miss you collectively. I'll miss you, Mike.
I appreciate it.
But I'm not
miss you guys. I know. Miss I know the too, office Mike. And you guys. It is. It's a lot. It sucks. It does. But excited for whatever comes next.
One of the best Mike stories I'll leave with is when I didn't know anybody here, I moved from California to Cincy. My only friend in the office was like a 44-year-old named Jeff Beers who had like, I'd be like, hey, do you want to go grab beer? He's like, did I have kids? Like, and there was a, Mike and I would start hanging out. And then there was someone else. I was another coworker. No one knows who they were, but they were like, hey, like Mike was, well, I was hanging out with Mike and we were talking shit about you. And then Mike was like, no, Austin's cool. And I was like, oh, Mike thinks I'm cool. And then Mike and I became friends from that. Rest is history.
Got to see you guys grow.
That was a pretty weak story to end on.
Yeah. Well, the best ones are in Vegas.
I want to. Yeah. All right, leave one of those. We've seen some of the pictures. No, I want to back up what Sam said, too. I mean, I've seen you grow since college, Mike. It's been great. You have been a key part of the team. football knowledge and the whole thing, right? In the early days, we're doing all this grading and stuff, yeah, and you had a lot of input into the grading process. And so we all taught each other, though, right? Yeah. Like, we all taught each other the process, and then you get to a point like, hey, maybe we should reconsider how we look at these types of plays or whatever it is, all this nuanced football stuff that was a lot of fun. And then you took over for me on the draft coverage, made it so much better, brought your own little spin to it and everything, and you continued to just grow. And always appreciate your opinion, always like asking you about players and what you think and just talking ball with you. So all that's great. So
that's not going to stop. We're still
we'll still talk. We'll still have fun. Best of luck. And, you know, go hire Mike.
Yeah.
Go hire Mike.
Go hire Mike. Everybody.
If you all want to. Bidding war. Is it summer of Mike time?
If you can handle
it. Oh, I'm golfing. I am golfing literally later today. I golfed yesterday. You golfed Sunday.
Live with your parents, right?
Yeah,
this is perfect.
Seeing Mike Renner in the real world with like actual job responsibilities is going to be fascinating.
Because
now you're going to have to set a whole new lower set of expectations again. You got to start from scratch.
That's going to be tough. It's not going to be tough. Trust me.
Yeah, you got to get with the right people in the new gig,
or just immediately start lowering the bar. You know, week one, missing deadlines.
We also had that time where you were a regular part of the podcast, and we had to hide the fact that you were like on assignment for 2 months while you were filming The Bachelor.
Oh yeah, that was fun time.
Oh, that's right.
Remember
two months? It was 3 weeks, but yeah.
I mean, it felt like months. It was 3 weeks. Well, you spun it into a few more weeks than that. You're like, sorry, guys.
I did actually.
Still filming. Off of it.
Still filming. Used all of his vacation time to go film The
Bachelor. That
summer was electric too.
That was like when Rick drove from California to here and took God knows how long. Yeah. Like, sorry, guys, can't learn the new system. I'm busy driving over to Cincinnati.
The summer in Cincy, the time Mike came back from The Bachelor was menacing. It was a good time.
Were you, you were attached to him then? You were
we were
hanging
hip
out?
To hip, dude. We were hip to hip.
Everybody's like, you're the guy. You were number 13 on The Bachelor.
Yeah. I said I was his agent.
Oh, that's smart.
Played smart.
You look like a sketchy agent. You do. Is that it?
I think we're done.
That's
it. Is that it for our show? That's the PFF NFL podcast today. Special thanks to Mike Renner, Austin Gale,
Tailgate,
for being here. I even forgot to remind everybody that the PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group. This still matters. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow? Well, Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. Hope you have your retirement all set up and everything, Mike.
I need to look into it.
As you head into the real world here.
I needed to figure out what to do with that. I don't know how that works.
All right, so that's our show for today. We'll be back Monday. Mock Draft Monday will continue. It might have Chris Collinsworth. We do have to lock him in Monday or Tuesday. And it's draft week, so it's going to be... gonna be crazy next week, and we'll be doing our draft show, you and I, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Without him next week, Thursday through Saturday. So thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you again on Monday.